We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
1, 2, 3.
This is Talkin' Tech with Teddy. Now, here is your host, Teddy Allen.
Hey, gang, thanks for joining us today. Happy Thanksgiving week. We're, of course, on Talkin' Tech with Teddy, where we try to introduce you to as many of the tech athletic family as we can. Today we've got a relatively new Bulldog, and that's Coach Googe. He joined us on February 30th. He's been coaching the offensive line. Welcome, Coach.
Well, it's good to be here.
This is the first time you've ever lived in Ruston, I believe, looking at your resume.
Absolutely.
Dave, and here's how you spell it, D-E-G-U-G-L-I-E-L-M-O. DeGuglielmo. Is that close?
DeGuglielmo.
Okay, so the accent is on the
Yale. Yes, DeGuglielmo.
And what?
There's a silent second G. And my really, my first name is Pacifico.
Well, of course.
My middle name is David.
Okay.
And my mom gave me the middle name so kids wouldn't throw rocks at me in school.
So you could have a regular.
Yeah.
I like Pacifico.
Pacifico DeGuglielmo.
Okay. So Coach Googe is easier for us.
Yeah, much easier.
And you're good with it.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of tough assignments, which is, you know, saying this name. By the way, what nationality is this?
Italian.
It's beautiful. This season has not been one for the faint-hearted.
No.
So what do you hope your guys learn from 3 or 4 months of this?
Well, you know, the objectives, obviously, your goals constantly change based on whatever it is you're, you know, the circumstances you're faced. One of the big things was, let's set the room up the right way. Let's get an environment where there's a professionalism, a learning, how they process the game, how they understand the game, how they communicate with one another, how they handle themselves on game day versus everyday practice. And I think we've accomplished a lot of those goals. We have a very tight-knit group, very professional group. They do their tests together. They challenge each other mentally. The communication on game day has been flawless. They make adjustments on the fly. They can conceptualize. I think you know, that's all part of the development of a real group, of a unit, is to get them to be able to think as a unit, think as one, and to communicate in a way that you can paint a picture with your words. So you're not always having to draw on a board or on a piece of paper to solve problems. And that's what they've become. They become problem solvers. And if you watch them in a game and throughout a game, especially as of late with our run game, they, you know, things don't always look right. They don't, you know, defense gets paid too, so they're moving all over the place. Well, if we can pick up a guy here and then redirect and pick up someone else, and next thing you know, running back is sprung for 10, 12 yards. That's what it's all about.
How would you grade the Bulldogs' offensive line against Southern Miss the other night in the loss here at the Jug?
To be honest with you, we played pretty well, you know. You know, it's all based on a game plan, I think. We went in there with the intention of running the football, and we did that early. Mm-hmm. We're of the mindset where we have to be prepared to block whatever's called, whenever it's called, whatever the circumstances are, and game situations, situational football, as people talk about it, they change. And, you know, are we designed to throw the ball 60 times a game as an offensive line? Probably not. We're more suited to the run game, and we're more suited to spot throwing the ball whenever possible. Now, we've had games where we've thrown the ball quite a bit. And we've had some games against some big opponents where the quarterback wasn't – I mean, Mississippi State, the only time we had a sack was we made a missed assignment, and the intentional grounding was a sack. Otherwise, picked up all their exotic blitzes, all their twists and stuff. And I think that's one of the areas where our offensive line has excelled. If you watch the tape – then I got a call from a buddy of mine who works in the league now, and he said, I've been watching your tape, and your guys excel at picking up exotic stunts. I said, well, we spent a lot of time on it, and sometimes it's the simplest things. The three-man rush we've had the biggest problem with.
That's something.
And it makes no sense. We can pick up six men, and they're twisted and blitzing all over the place, but we have such a quick eye, and I've been harping on them for the entire time I've been here about accelerated vision, knowing what's going to happen before it happens, based on simple alignments and little keys and indicators, and they've done a tremendous job of it. The basic stuff, it's sometimes because we're not thinking on the elite level that they let their guard down and their sets aren't correct and that's where some problems occur.
Well, things happen faster down there than the average Joe realizes. Coach grew up in Lexington, played ball up at Boston University. Guard and center, wives Kimberly Ann and daughter Sage Ashley. And he's been around the league for a while and also in college, both in double-digit years. With your background, how do you handle a year like this? Why does the dog seem to be so up and down?
Well, again, I have a specialty. I deal with offensive line only. And over the years, I've learned to direct my focus on only the things that I can help improve. Obviously, I'm part of the game plan in terms of the run game and protection packages and things like that. But in the big picture, I have to allow the higher ups to do what it is they do, what they specialize in. So, in terms of why we up and down, I think that's a bigger picture question. In terms of my group, we have to remain focused on next week, always next week. That's the one advantage to having worked in the NFL, because you don't have time to even think about last week. you address the issues real quickly, and then you move on. And by the time Tuesday morning hits in the NFL, you've forgotten all about it. And for me, it's Monday. By the time Monday morning comes around, I forgot what the game looked like last week because I'm so deep into the next opponent.
And I can ask you about Rice defense in a minute, but if I ask you about Rice special teams or Rice offense –
No idea.
That's beautiful because you're lasered in on your gang.
And I get to the point where I don't learn their names. Mm-hmm. A lot of people like to learn the defenders' names. I know the numbers. Tell me who you're talking about. 92, 91. You know, whoever it is we're facing. Number one, he's injured. Mm-hmm. You know, you go so quickly on analyzing personnel.
Right.
And to me, that's very important that you know what kind of people you're dealing with. And every game plan, you see, we've veered away from. Well, this is what we run, so we're going to run it this week. Now, if we're facing a particular team that has particular talent at certain position groups, in this particular case, they have a very strong defensive front. So we have to alter our blocking schemes based on the fact that they're probably going to be a lot harder to move and a lot harder to reach because of their athleticism and their ability to throw an offensive lineman than we may have done last week. And we played, that was a pretty good defense, but they were a lot more movement oriented, and they didn't sit in a power base like these guys do. So we can't go in with the same game plan every single week. It's a different plan of attack.
Sure.
And that's the way I learned it in the NFL, and that's the way we approach it here. Not everybody has weaknesses. Doesn't matter how good a team you have, there's a weakness somewhere. And each player has weaknesses. And you have to be able to take a, you know, and I think a guy that's played tremendously well for me this year has been Abe Delphin. Mm-hmm. Well, Abe's not a real tall guy. You know, he's a smaller guy in the bigger picture. But he's tough and he's smart and he understands angles. All right, well, let's utilize what Abe does well and not put him in circumstances where he's one-on-one on the nose all day long. And I don't mind that half the day, but the other half of the day, I don't want it. And there's certain noses you're going to face where I don't want it at all. And I'm honest enough with my players that I tell them, hey, this is a deficiency. And we had one this week. We had a guy.
Southern Miss had a tough
nose. Yeah. Well, we had a guy last week who ran through on a play. It had nothing to do with Abe. It was a backside shade. And, you know, Abe, the way the table was set, it was required Kelton Hollins to cut him off. Well, at this stage of the season, Kelton Hollins doesn't have the mobility to do that. So we made an adjustment on the sideline. And right in front of Kelton, we talked about it. I said, listen, we've got to know our personnel. He's nursing a bad knee, or he's a little bit sore. He can't move the same way. And I'm having this conversation literally right in front of Kelton. And Abe looked up and said, yep, I got to know my personnel. And I said, Kelton, you good with that? And he goes, I'm great. I was kind of hoping he made the call out there. So they know each other, and they understand what's going to be required to solve a problem. That's what a mature line does. Not get offended. Understand this is what I do well. Mm-hmm. This is what I don't do well. And how do we solve the problem?
Southern Miss scored the first time they had the ball the other night. But you gathered your guys up on the sidelines and you were talking. And you talked a whole lot to Marcus Williams, the running back. So what are you telling him when you're drawing stuff on your?
Well, sometimes,
are you saying we're trying to block it here and you're running here and we need you to go?
Well, they had a unique pattern of how they played the front. Mm-hmm. And the defensive ends do a really good job of reading the blocks of the tackles and then folding over or doing such. Mm-hmm. So, well, let's hit the Marcus on the particular time I think we're talking about is on our first series, we had a great opportunity to run our outside zone play. He decided to cut it up inside. And I said, okay, what were you seeing? I want to know what he was seeing because it's important to get their feedback. What are you seeing? And I said, okay, this is what happened. What are you seeing, and why did you make that decision? And then try to make them understand that you can't go there because we're pushing guys backing there.
Right. That's what I thought. And it made a difference immediately.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's part of the run game is to get it going and to build a momentum throughout the game. You have to feel out their movement patterns. How are they fitting the run? How are they moving? And what can we do to either alter it or use that to our advantage. Mm-hmm. So in this particular case, the defensive linemen were moving out towards the tight end. Well, that's great. Kelton Hollins and Josh Moe were able to use that momentum to then throw them wider and have the ball come right underneath. So once we figure out what their game plan is as we go through our footwork, now we get a real understanding of where the ball is going to end up.
Well, you mentioned Kelton and Joshua and Abe, who was all-region, all-academic this week, so good for him. What about your tackles?
Well, we've rotated three guys mainly, and Byron Russell was in there as a left tackle earlier in the year and has kind of had a few nagging injuries, different body parts, so it slowed him down quite a bit. But Dakota White has jumped right in, and he's stepped right up, and he's a tremendous athlete. He's got an absolutely fabulous upside. And if he just keeps playing the way he's been playing, minus a few, you know, faux pas here or there, we're going to be all right. And we've gotten probably better play out of Chris Fournier than we ever imagined we would get out of a transfer out of a FCS program.
And then explain briefly, if you can, how moving him to the left might actually help your overall.
Well, he was a left tackle in college. And we weren't sure initially if left tackle would be too big a jump from FCS to this level and some of the defensive ends we face in here. And it turns out he's more natural at the left than at the right.
Okay.
So the move probably, if I had a little bit more understanding of where we were in that case, see, a lot of it has to do with, can I move the other guy? And Dakota, because Dakota had played both sides, you know, there was a chance that Dakota would step in at left and Chris could have stayed at right, but when because of the rotation, the way it was, I couldn't move Sam Williams to left, so he had to stay at right. So it just kind of worked out that Chris was over there, and we realized how well he played there we kept him there.
Yeah, Sam being the transfer from over in, he's from Fort Ice, Arkansas, and played it. He was a Warhawk. Jaron Gilbert's also played a lot in these big packages. Give us just a word about him. He's from down in Lake Charles.
Yeah, he's done a good job. He's learning. He's a young kid, and he makes young kid mistakes sometimes. The thing about Jaron is he's really smart. Now, sometimes you wouldn't know it when you watch some of the things he does, but he's and it's because he overthinks it.
Okay.
And I like a player that thinks. You know, smart players are fast players. Fast players are effective players. And he's a smart player. We just got to get him to play smart all the time.
Okay.
And I don't think that's been that hasn't been an issue in that regard, that he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. But when it comes down to his energy and his excitement to play in the game, sometimes that overrides his fundamental footwork. Gotcha. And things like that. That's all. And that's what happens. That happens a lot to Dakota. Younger players fall into that category. The excitement of playing sometimes blocks out the, I got to take a step to the left, 6 inches to the left with my left foot, and they get all kind of, get out of whack with their footwork.
I think a couple of weeks ago you mentioned you challenged Dakota White specifically. You mentioned him. How do you do that, and when does that start? Does that start?
Well, you know, he had an opportunity when Byron got hurt. Mm-hmm. He had an opportunity to start, and he didn't come out and practice with focus, concentration, necessary, as far as I was concerned, necessary to be the man. And I jumped his tail pretty good in practice, and the response wasn't what I wanted. And me being me and being raised the way I was raised as an Italian with a dad that came over from Italy, I was not – that would, to me was basically, okay, so he wants the full court press. Mm. And I gave it to him. And I challenged him in every way possible. And I made it clear to him that it was going to be either my way or no way. And I didn't give a rat's tail whether he was here or not here, playing or not playing, happy, not happy. He was either going to do it our way or there was going to be no sight of him on game day. And instead of starting him, we decided we would start the other two tackles that were available. And what happened is he came off the bench and played tremendous game. And by doing that, he earned himself a starting role. What he could have done on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, he earned it on a game day, which was probably and to bring it back the following week and watch the tape and say, hey, this is why I was so hard on you during the week. And if you learn to understand the necessary parts of preparation, you're going to be fine. And, you know, like this week, I sat him down after the game and I talked to him about the false start penalties.
Pre-snap.
We had two false start penalties. And I said, you know, as talented as you are and as much as you give us during the snap, these things affect the team, and especially on the first play of the game. Mm. Not only does it stall the drive a little bit, but it also, it sends a message to the offense that we are not prepared, we are not ready mentally, or we're not focused. And I said, it's not an effort thing. Everyone knows it's about effort. You've got great effort, you got great intensity, and great passion for your play. But the message was sent. We're off kilter right at the beginning of the game. Mm-hmm. Now, that wasn't the reason we played well or played poorly as an offense, but it's not a message we want to send. Mm-hmm. And an offensive line should send a message of calm, relief, security, comfort, all the things that you think of when you think of a big furry dog sitting on your porch.
Okay. Well, a couple more things. We'll let you get back to scheming and all that kind of stuff. You didn't grow up around football, did you?
Not really. Well, my dad wasn't a football. He's a baseball guy. Came to this country, fell in love with baseball. Yeah, but not soccer like a lot of Europeans.
Okay. All right. No. But once you found it, how long did it take you to get dug in? And you said, I may want to do this for a long
time. Well, we started, believe it or not, my folks put us in it when I was 9 years old.
Wow.
So I was a bigger kid, and at least width-wise, not necessarily height-wise, but I was thicker.
Width-wise.
So they kind of felt like this might be a sport that was conducive to my size. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I enjoyed the physicality, but I also enjoyed the schematics of the game. Mm-hmm. And as I got further and further along, I just realized, like, I just understand I can see it. And and a lot of people ask me, you know, when they watch a game, they watch the ball and they watch the quarterback. And I just see things that, they're going to have a problem. They're outnumbered on the left. They're out, you know, I can see what's going on. And I equate it to that movie Good Will Hunting, where the kid just, he could look at the board and see a math equation and know the solution.
It all makes sense.
And I can look at a still shot and say, we can run this, we can't run this, this or that. We're going to have a problem reaching this guy. This is going to be an issue, and these protections won't work. Mm-hmm. And I can do it in a matter of seconds. But that's where it ends. I don't look at routes. I don't look at the bigger picture part of it. I have that little equation in my head. And I knew that as a youngster. I did it in high school. I thought that way. In college, one of my college line coaches was Tony Sperano, ended up being the Miami Dolphins coach. And him and I used to have conversations on the bench about scheme. And the other players would be like, what are you guys talking about? I said, don't worry about it. We'll get you straight. You know, and that's how, as a player, I was like that. So I just kind of knew, like, this might be a neat thing to get into.
Yeah. It seems like it fits you well. And you're a regular day for you is a pretty long one during the season, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm an early morning guy. I get in here normally, you know, in the, 4:30, 5 o'clock range. Mm-hmm. And I don't leave till 11 o'clock at night. You know, it's a long, there are long days. Some nights later, some nights a little earlier.
The game's so hard, it almost demands that.
Well, if you want to be, I learned my trade under Tom Coughlin, both as a graduate assistant in college and as a an assistant when I first got in the NFL. And he's a firm believer that you can outwork your opponent. You know, you may have a lot of deficiencies, but you can be smarter. It takes no talent to be smarter. And you can outwork them. Mm-hmm. And there was a satisfaction of looking at a complex look or complex defense and finding the key and finding the simplest way to protect based on what they give you. And it might, you know, a lot of people just say, well, this is our rule and that's what we do. And that's fine. And I do that a lot myself. But in this particular case, when you have guys that are maybe playing against some greater talent, and if there's one position that is always beat right off the bat talent-wise, it's offensive line versus defensive line. Every other position matches up pretty equally against their opponent, and we're the ones at a disadvantage. So I try to give my guys the advantage, and by doing that, in order to do that, I need to watch hours and hours of tape.
And you're saying just because defensive line, that position's got so much more athletic and fast and all that since you started out. All right,
that doesn't mean we're not talented. It just means that
that's where they freakish athletes.
Yeah, and if they can't do it there, where do they go?
Right.
Offensive line. So, I mean, we're the last stop before the bus stop.
All right, two things, and I'll let you go. You mentioned your width and you're Italian. So is there anything on the Italian front that Southern people may be missing out on that we're not aware of eating-wise?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's Italian food. In Boston,
where you're from,
how do you beat it?
Right.
Now there are Italians all over the place. My understanding is that there's some fine Italian restaurants down in New Orleans where there are huge populations of Italians. Mm-hmm. I guess I did not know that, so I'm learning that. But in terms of Italian food and Italian culture, the Arklamis is more like it was with the 5 years I lived in South Carolina. You know, where you find little pockets, little restaurants here and there that know how to serve it up the right way. And I'm not one of those Italian food snobs that can't eat Italian food because it's not made by...
You're a man of the people.
Yeah, I mean, I prefer not to. I really don't go out to eat Italian food. I eat... The other night I was eating venison sausage and with jalapenos and cheddar in it. And I was eating boudin and a whole bunch of other things that were either shot, killed, or
murdered
somewhere around here, somewhere locally, and ground up and put
you're
together.
Good with that.
No, I love it. Not just good with it. I look for it because if you're going to fully immerse yourself in a region and be comfortable with the people, you gotta live the life. I mean, that's what's great about America is no matter where you go, every region has its specialties. It doesn't just have accents. It has food, it has cultural events, it has things that are more, like I did my first, I don't know about the crayfish there.
The crawfish at the fair.
I did the actual rip their heads off thing. It was fabulous. It was an experience.
That was the first time for you?
That was the first time I had done that. I did it at Skip's house in the springtime, and I thought, well, okay, this is let's check this off the list, ripping these little things apart and sucking the heads, you know. And, you know, to me, that was that's an experience that's what traveling around and working all these jobs, that's what allows me to do.
But and if you were to go back to Boston, let's say, and you just really need some Italian food, you go where and get what?
I go to my my aunt's house.
Okay.
Zia Maria. Okay, Auntie Marie. I would go to her house, and she would probably make me chicken cutlets, okay? And then she would make a delicious lasagna, all right? And the cutlets would be kind of served on the side to begin with, and then the lasagna would come later. You know, my family, like Thanksgiving coming up, well, every one of them will eat some kind of lasagna or pasta beforehand, ravioli, manicotti. They'll eat something before they even get to the turkey. There's going to be pasta at every cookout, at every holiday. It doesn't matter what the traditional fare is. They will eat pasta.
That's big league.
That's what we do.
That's big league. All right. Before we go, the morale of the team. You know, you're one of the grown-ups. So obviously, that's one of your jobs is to get you guys ready to play. What do you – because it's been a grind. I mean, there's been some heartbreaking stuff happening. It's been well documented. So how do you handle your guys going into – play this Rice team?
Listen, there's one thing about my guys. They've been very mature, very steady. You know, one of the objectives going into the year for us was to show the team, and just the team, that we were not the weak spot, because we were considered the weak point of the offense, and therefore the team coming into the season. And there was a lot of doubt. Could they do it? Were they worthwhile? And their objective every week is the same. Go out there, provide enough protection to throw the ball, provide enough holes to run the football, and give a calming influence to the team, give a leadership, an aggressiveness, and a set an attitude for the team. And I think they've done that, and they continue to take that approach. It's not all about wins and losses. They've established themselves as a real strong unit and a confident unit. And now they may not be the best unit in America, but they strive for it every day. And that's the same approach. I noticed no difference in their approach yesterday after the, I don't know, what are we, eighth or ninth loss, whatever it was, that I did after the first one. They're very professional, and it's just because that's how we handle the room, myself and my assistant, Hussam. We handle the room in a way that is
worker.
Yeah, he works his tail off, and he's been a great addition to the to the program. He's a very smart guy. MBA. This guy's got an MBA. You know, he's a very smart guy, and he's done a lot in terms of helping these guys academically and keeping on track, you know, these guys on track for a lot of other things other than just football.
Well, thanks to him, by the way. Thanks for y'all grinding it out, and best wishes against the Owls. Before we go, you're a great O-line teacher, but teach us again your entire name, starting with Pacifico.
Okay, Pacifico.
Pacifico.
Yeah, that's the Spanish saying, Pacifico. Pacifico David De Guglielmo. De Guglielmo. Like, I went into a restaurant once, and the owner of the restaurant was sitting in the corner, and he said, "What's your name, son?" And I said, "Dave De Guglielmo." And he looked at me, an old Italian fellow, and he said, "No, it's not. Now say it the right way." And I said, "Okay, it's Pacifico De Guglielmo." And he asked me to say it three or four more times. And I said, "Why are you asking me to say it?" He goes, "It's like a song. Don't ever say it the other way again. You understand me?" I didn't even know this man. It was an old Italian man. I said, "Yes, sir." So I've never said it again.
This music, the dulcet tones of Coach Googs. We'll stop there. Thanks and good luck against the Owls. Till next time.
See ya.
You've been listening to Talkin' Tech with Teddy. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.